The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Is there more to deja vu than just our mind playing games with us? Of course there is. You have to check out the new action-adventure video game, Unknown 9 Awakening. You get to play as Haruna, a spiritually awakened heroine with the fantastic ability to venture into the fold, a mysterious dimension that is connected to our own. Her voice is gifted to us by the magical actress Anya Chalotra, who plays Yennefer on the Witcher series. In the game, Haruna is on a quest for powerful hidden knowledge and learns how to master her unique connection to the fold, which allows her to harness and channel its powers into our own world. But such great power does not go unnoticed. Because of her gifts, Haruna becomes a target of the Ascendants, a splinter faction of a secret society known as the Leap Year Society. The Ascendants' goal? To use the fold to alter human history for their own benefit. Their confrontations take them all over the world, from the sands of Mauritania to the perilous Indian jungles and even to the gothic landscapes of Portugal. Get ready to dive into a mysterious parallel dimension. Unknown 9 Awakening releases on October 18th, 2004 for PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Pre-order your copy today and learn more about the Unknown 9 universe at unknown9.com/mystery. That's unknown9.com/mystery.
Okie dokie.
In the summertime.
Well, hello.
The weather is hot.
I just want our listeners to know, we have actually recorded Kim, the episode you heard last week, we just recorded it. And Josh and Kim decided that they weren't hungry enough for lunch, so they want to do my episode. Now, if we get halfway through this episode and Kim's stomach starts growling or Josh starts growling.
A piece of hard candy.
This candy is good.
It is.
Kim gave us grape candy.
It's sugar-free,
but it's not bad.
Mm-mm.
It tastes good. I like it.
It's like grape drink.
Yeah. We got a Jolly Rancher good. Over here, too, for next.
There's a Jolly Rancher left in that bag? Son of a gun, I thought I had ate all those. Those are my favorite.
It doesn't say what flavor it is. It just says zero sugar.
Looks like that a watermelon.
Yeah, it looks like watermelon.
I didn't see no butterscotch or nothing.
Uh-uh.
I probably ate all those, too.
He's got them star mints that Dad would put in his pocket for church.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my grandpa carried them around all the time. Those and butterscotch.
And the cinnamon discs.
Yeah, we didn't do the cinnamon ones. It was either butterscotches or peppermint.
That was my favorite part about church, is the candy.
Oh, yeah, me too.
If you didn't have time to stop beforehand, just go shake hands with some of the old people and you'd come back with a handful. Mm-hmm. Here, honey, have a mint. Which, now looking back at it, I'm like, did our breath stink?
So I started grad school, right? And I wanted to tell you a funny story, and I've just been saving it. So I get there for the first, because I had 3 days of orientation. And so I tried to, when I first go there to park, because it's in person, I have to drive to Fort Wayne every day. So when I get there for orientation, I thought, okay, I'm going to park off in the distance, in the side corner, and try not to let people see the type of car I'm driving. Cause I just want to be an incognito everyday person, that no one knows that I'm a podcaster or anything like that.
Right.
So the beginning of the day was worked well. You know, I got away from my car and there was no question, nothing. And the other people in my class are, it's just a small class. But then the second half of the orientation, we have to volunteer at a park, a local park in Fort Wayne.
Volunteer?
Mm-hmm.
At a park?
Yeah.
I hate forced volunteering. It's not volunteering.
Right. So we get voluntold. I mean, we're where to be and, you know, all that stuff. So get out there. Well, I had to pick up my student ID. And so they wanted to, they were handing them all out. And you know, when you have the last name of Waters, you're always last. Mm-hmm. This is how it works. Mm-hmm. So all the other kids had already gotten theirs. And look, I said kids.
I was like, look.
We're all adults. The other adults had gotten their IDs and, you know, they had already gone out to their car to drive over to the park.
Are you the oldest one?
I am. I am the oldest. I'm the fattest. And I'm the tallest.
The meanest.
Well, the tallest is a given.
And they better recognize who's running the show. But anyway, so they had all already left. And I thought, okay, well, I'll drive fast, try to get out there. And I thought, you know, it's going to be a park. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people and I can just park, you know, a little far. And so no one sees the car and ask questions and all that stuff.
It sticks out, though.
Yes. So I pull up and they had blocked off a parking lot just for us.
Oh,
and I thought, oh God. Well, all of the other students that are in my class are with the park ranger dude. And they've all like gathered in the center of this parking lot outside.
Oh boy.
Here I pull in and every one of them is looking at this mystery machine Tesla. And I'm just like, gosh, I wish I could just die right now.
I should have kept it white.
And then I park and then I get out and they're like, oh my gosh, like what's with the car? Because, you know, it has a certain license plate that
mind
goes
your
along
business.
With it. So I should have said, I found
I ain't here to make friends. Leave me alone.
So then it, you know, someone had Googled me and figured out that I was a podcaster. And so now everyone freaking knows. If it wasn't for my car, though, like that's how the whole thing started spiraling, is with the car.
The struggle.
That's funny.
I know, but I had so it's an hour drive, and for orientation, I'd be there at 8 o'clock. That is a long drive for an 8 o'clock thing.
I don't like that they Googled you. I'm like, I do not consent to be known.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're a paying patron.
I mean, good thing I didn't have, you know, like nudes or something out there. Like, oh my God.
God, I hope.
Oh my God.
That's the
that would
dream.
Blind everybody.
I know. So, I mean, just people who Google people, you know, you just never know what you're going to find online.
No, that's true.
But yeah. I'm just glad that they have to put the UK thing in there.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Or you have to be in the UK when you
Google. You did what? Yeah, to chickens?
Yeah. Otherwise, there would have been a lot of questions.
Right.
Like, I don't know if that background check was that thorough. You know,
people don't know who I am anymore.
When you Google my name, there's some motocross driver that comes up before, really. Like several things before anything that I've done comes up. So thank God.
It was time to renew my license plate a week or so ago. So I went to go get my license plate and it was time for me to actually get a new plate. So I had been wanting to get rid of my crime to license plate anyway.
Okay. Now you had mentioned something in the Unmasked episode that we just recorded. And all I can hear is just, it reminds
me. I saw
me of,
another Jolly Rancher.
It reminds me of being in church.
It does.
And like you have this candy, but it's wrapped in this plastic that makes
and
all this
gotta
noise.
And you got to take it off
and
real
like
quiet.
During prayer, you're like, dear God, I just want this candy in my mouth.
Every time Uncle
watering.
Larry starts talking in tongues, you're like, take your time.
Amen. Okay. But anyway. So, Kim, you mentioned something in Unmasked, and I told you I was going to talk about in the main episode. What was that?
Her beaver.
I don't know.
That take up the whole episode. It was something.
Oh my God,
about
I had a watermelon jelly rancher.
Mm. Oh.
We already talked about hairy balls.
No, I know. So, we were on our way to Fort Wayne. We had Rick with us. Kim was driving. Well, Kim needed to get gas. So, she stopped at a truck stop. You know, it's the one that's there in Huntington that has...
I think it's Love's.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it has that...
A lot of truckers on Grindr want me to go there and be a lot lizard.
I believe it. But they have that one restaurant that I feel like Josh has gone to before.
Iron Skillet?
No. No. Taco John's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that sounds good.
So the two near us is Peru and Huntington. So anyway, so it has the Taco John's in it. So Kim goes in to use the bathroom. She leaves her phone in the car. And it, cool. I mean, when her phone is near me and I can see it, it just like calls me.
Right.
Shane.
Except not literally because he wouldn't answer.
Here's the problem. The reason I forgot my phone in the car is because I had to go to the bathroom really bad.
You had to go. I had to go. She was waddling.
So I was in a hurry and I didn't think about picking it up. And just as soon as I got into the bathroom, I was like, shit. I left my phone in the car. Mm-hmm. So after I go to the bathroom, I'm walking out of the building and Shane's in the front seat.
Holding her phone.
I walk out of the building and I had to get gas anyway. So my car was sitting at the pumps and I yelled from the door, put my phone down.
She did. It was so loud and embarrassing.
Because I knew what he was doing.
But I told her I didn't do anything because Emily had also texted during that period of time. And so I responded to her. And so I was like, oh, Emily texts you. So I responded. So she
leave me the F alone. You're adopted. No.
I normally say things like that. And then she's like, hey, Shane, tell my mom this, you know, because she knows it's me then. But anyway, so what I did on Kim's phone, I don't know if you saw it. I was going to change her cover fit picture, but I knew that she wouldn't be in there for very long because she changed her cover picture all the time. So I was going to change something stupid.
I don't change
like
it that
a picture
often.
For her ex-husband. Anyway.
You wouldn't have found one on there.
I could have found one. Anyway, so while she was in that little truck stop, I checked in on Facebook at that truck stop and I said, just trying to make a little money for my yarn addiction. But I also mentioned like Joann's and Hobby Lobby. But it was rather funny. People liked it. It was a fun trip. We had a good time. And I think Rick had a good time too. I took a funny picture outside of the grave of Johnny Appleseed.
It looked fun. I was at home shitting my life away. Wishing death upon me.
That was too funny. I have a big booklet.
God,
I think your mystery is going to take a while.
I'm going to get into it. Hold on a minute. Now, Kim had us guess what her mystery is. If you're going to keep making noise.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to mute her.
It's getting better. It was from talking so much when I was doing mine.
If you quit licking so much pee-pee from weird men. Anyway, so what do you guys think my mystery is today?
It's hard telling. Hers I only knew because I saw Loch Ness on her page and she was cutting.
You bitch.
I can't help but have good eyesight.
No one has a guess of what mine is.
Can you give us a hint?
No.
Well, I mean, that's completely leaves everything wide open.
The mystery of Moon Lake.
Lock your legs, Kim.
Wide open.
And cheap. Okay. My mystery today is going to be about Johnny Appleseed.
Oh.
So we're going to learn about Johnny Appleseed. Now, in the last episode, Josh mentioned some rumors about him.
He was a slut.
But what do you guys really know about Johnny Appleseed? Except now he's buried in Fort Wayne.
He went around and planted
spread his apple seeds
and put his seed in women and has a whole bunch of half-giant children. No, I'm thinking Paul Bunyan.
You are. Okay. So a lot of people don't realize that he's buried in Fort Wayne. And even when you hear the words Johnny Appleseed, you just remember, oh, I think he was someone, and I'll be honest, I thought he was fictional for a long time. But, you know, you recognize that he did something significant with apples, or there were some apple stories, you know, some children tales or whatever.
I think when I was younger, I probably thought he was fictional also. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
There's some, like, children's books about Johnny Appleseed. And there's not a whole lot of, like, written record about him. So like when I was looking up information, trying to find it, I really had to dig deep
in there
to find information about Johnny Appleseed because he lived a long time ago. So let's journey back and we're going to go to Leominster. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that town's name right, but it's in Massachusetts. And we're going to the date of September 26, 1774. Now, this was the day that John Chapman was born. And of course, we now know him as Johnny Appleseed.
Oh, he's a Libra.
Yeah. But back then, he was just a kid with a future that no one could have predicted. Johnny was the second child of Nathaniel Chapman and Elizabeth Simons. His father, Nathaniel, was a real patriot. He had fought in the Revolutionary War. He endured the brutal winter at Valley Forge, and he was at the Battle of Bunker Hill. So he, during that period of time, he would have fought alongside General George Washington, who would become our first president. But that kind of resilience must have been a big influence on Johnny, who would go on later to face his own challenges on the American frontier. Life wasn't easy for little Johnny. When he was just 2 years old, his mother passed away while giving birth, and his father was off fighting in the war at that time. So Johnny and his older sister, Elizabeth, were left in a really tough spot, and so they had to start relying on relatives just to get by, I mean, with the bare minimum. I believe they lived in like a log cabin in the woods, and there's a marker there now, a historic marker of where he was born. But those early hardships helped shape Johnny's character, and that gave him the strength and independence that would later define his life. Eventually, his dad, Nathaniel, remarried, and the family moved to Longmeadow, Massachusetts. So when they moved there, it was surrounded by fields, forests, and creeks, and Johnny developed a deep love for the natural world. Even as a young kid, he had a special connection with animals. Squirrels, rabbits, birds, they seemed to sense something gentle in him, and so it made them trust him, so it was very common for those animals just to come up to him. But there was something more to Johnny than just his love for nature. He was also deeply spiritual. While his family was religious, Johnny went a step further and embraced a branch of Christianity called Swedenborgianism.
Sounds culty.
It does. Now, this wasn't your typical Sunday service kind of faith. Swedenborgians believed in a profound connection between the spiritual and natural worlds. And Johnny was all in on that idea. So for him, planting apple trees wasn't just about providing food. It was a spiritual mission. And it was a way to help connect him with the divine. By the time Johnny was a young man, he wasn't just an ordinary person. He was someone with a deep love for the earth. He had a strong spiritual connection. Those were two passions that set him on a path to becoming the legend that we know today as Johnny Appleseed. And from here on out, I'll refer to John Chapman as Johnny Appleseed. And now that we know where he came from, we can dive into what really made him tick as a person. He had, like I mentioned, that deep connection with nature and spiritual beliefs, and so that really separated him from everyone else. Johnny wasn't just another pioneer heading out west. From a young age, he had almost a mystical bond with nature. You could find him wandering the woods, along creeks, soaking in the natural world around him. But it wasn't just about enjoying the scenery. Johnny had a genuine empathy for every living thing. Animals in particular were drawn to him. There are stories of how squirrels would climb on his shoulders and birds would eat straight from his hands.
I'm pretty sure I've seen pictures like that.
Oh, I'm sure.
With a squirrel on his shoulder. Or... Mm-hmm.
It's as if they sensed a kindred spirit inside of him. Now, this love for nature wasn't just a hobby for Johnny. It was a way of life. He believed that nature was sacred, treating it with a reverence that was rare even among those who lived off the land. He saw himself as a caretaker, someone responsible for nurturing the world around him, and that sense of responsibility extended to the people that he met as well. But Johnny's connection to nature was just one part of what defined him. As I mentioned, he was also deeply spiritual. He followed the teachings of Emanuel Swedenborg, which this is the person that his religion was based off of. He was a Sweden philosopher and a mystic. Swedenborg believed that the natural world around him was a reflection of the spiritual world, and Johnny embraced those teachings fully. For him, planting trees wasn't just about providing that food or even making a living for himself. It was a spiritual act, a way to bring the spiritual and natural worlds together in harmony. So each seed that he planted, in a way, was like a prayer, a way of spreading love and goodness across the land. Johnny carried religious tracts with him as he traveled, Swedenborgen writings that he shared with settlers that he met along the way. So when he would meet those settlers, he'd sit down with them. They would talk about God, nature, and the connection between the two. And he would leave them with something to think about. It wasn't just about spreading his faith. Johnny genuinely believed that these teachings could help people live better and more fulfilled lives. His spirituality influenced every aspect of his life. Johnny lived simply, really simply. He wore ragged clothes. He often was barefoot. And he traveled everywhere barefoot, by the way. And he carried all his possessions on his back. To most people, he might have looked like a wandering hermit, but Johnny didn't care about appearances. He believed that the material possessions were a distraction from what really mattered, living a life of purpose and love. So as Johnny was traveling across the American frontier, he wasn't just planting those apple seeds. He was planting seeds of kindness, of spirituality, and a deep respect for the natural world. Johnny saw himself as a part of something much bigger than just one man wandering the wilderness. He was on a mission. He had a mission to spread love, both for God and for the earth, one apple tree at a time. Johnny's journey as an apple tree planter began in the late 1790s. He was in his mid-20s, and like many young men of the time, he was drawn to the idea of heading west. But Johnny's journey wasn't about finding land or fortune. It was about providing something essential to the settlers following the same path, apple trees. Apples were more than just a tasty snack back then. They were a crucial food source. The cider made from the apples were often safer to drink than most water available on the frontier.
Apple cider, that's all I've been able to think.
So when Johnny planted an apple tree, he wasn't just providing settlers a source of fruit, he was giving them a lifeline.
A source of cyanide poison, too.
So Johnny started by collecting seeds from cider mills. If he wouldn't have collected them, those seeds would have just been discarded. But Johnny saw a lot of potential with him, so he got a lot of seeds out of it, a lot of free seeds. So he'd clean and sort and dry those seeds. Then he'd package them in a little buckskin bags. These bags were like little treasure chests to Johnny. They were filled with the promise of life and sustenance for the settlers that he would meet.
In about 10 years.
But Johnny didn't just walk around tossing seeds on the ground, which is kind of like what I pictured.
Yeah, that's, you know, me too.
He was far more strategic. He'd select specific spots and he would plant nurseries, often choosing locations that he knew settlers would pass through or where new communities would soon spring up. He'd clear the land, plant the seeds, and then fence off the area to protect those young trees from animals. These nurseries were carefully tended to. Johnny would return to them regularly, making sure that those trees were growing strong and healthy. Johnny was also ahead of his time in approach to planting. While most nurserymen of the era focused on grafting is when you, it's kind of hard for me to explain.
You cut off a top of a tree and graft another type of tree onto it.
Yeah, but Johnny believed in the Vans Mons theory, which argued that improving fruit by seedling, you would let trees grow naturally from seeds, which in his opinion was the best way to cultivate strong, resilient trees. So it was somewhat against his spiritual beliefs to do that, to graft. Now, this more natural, organic method fit perfectly with Johnny's philosophy of life. As Johnny moved westward, he established a lot of nurseries across Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Indiana.
I want to know how he remembered where they were all at.
Right. And he didn't stop there. His work extended into Illinois. and there are even reports of him planting in what would become Iowa.
Hmm.
Johnny was tireless in his mission. He constantly was on the move, always looking for the next place to plant. But it wasn't just about planting trees for Johnny. He saw his work as a help to people. He'd trade saplings for fruit, clothing, or other necessities, and in many cases, he'd just give them away to families in need. Johnny wasn't in it for the money. By the time of his death, despite owning a significant amount of land, he had little wealth to his name. He'd given so much of it away, seeing the well-being of others as far more important than personal gain. Johnny didn't just drop seeds off and move on. He built relationships with the settlers, staying in their homes, sharing meals, and talking about his beliefs. He carried his Bible and religious items everywhere he went, often sitting down with families to discuss faith, leaving them with spiritual as well as physical nourishment.
Dick.
Johnny Appleseed wasn't just a man with a bag of seeds. He was a pioneer of a different sort. He saw the westward expansion of America not just as a physical journey, but as a spiritual one, and he wanted to help settlers connect with the land in a meaningful way. Each tree he planted was a symbol of hope and growth. It was a testament to his belief in the future of the country and the people who were carving out new lives in it.
Speaking of grafting, have you guys seen those fruit salad trees that they've made? Where they'll, you know, cut off a base stump of a tree and then graft multiple varieties of fruit onto the tree. And then when it grows, like there's ones that have like apples, pears, oranges, lemons. And
that's crazy.
It's a literal fruit salad tree.
Did you say a year on when he was alive? Did you say dates?
Yeah.
What was the dates?
If you would listen more, Kim, I swear to God.
I just don't remember what you said.
He was born in 1774.
Okay.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Growing older has been less mysterious ever since I started using Hormone Harmony to help with the symptoms of menopause. Between the sleepless nights, random hot flashes, mild mood swings, it was making it really difficult to focus, rest, and enjoy myself. Hormone Harmony has helped make traveling around with 2 young men in a mystery machine a lot more bearable. Hormone Harmony is not just for those of us suffering from menopause. Women who have symptoms of hormonal imbalances can benefit from Hormone Harmony. It has helped guide me through the mystery of menopause into a more harmonious journey through a natural process in each woman's life. The company behind Hormone Harmony, Happy Mammoth, advocates for women and helps them regain control of their hormones. With over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, more women are feeling more like themselves now more than ever. Thank you, Hormone Harmony, for unmasking the monster behind my menopause. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code MYSTERY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code MYSTERY for 15% off today.
Good you.
Right. So when you think of Johnny Appleseed planting his trees, remember, it wasn't just about apples. He was also providing for the future. He was nurturing both the land and the people, and he was spreading a message of faith and connection to the natural world. Johnny Appleseed was planting more than just the seeds. He was planting the roots of a new kind of life on the American frontier, which would have been really important because as those people would have been moving out west when the West started opening up, and by West, at this point in time, I'm talking about Ohio, Indiana, Iowa. You know, I'm not talking about further than that.
Right.
At that point in time, I believe it was England or France, I think, had just basically gotten rid of that land and signed it back over to us. So it was people were starting to come over. And what we know about settlers is, you know, you would start coming West, but then life could be really hard. So just the fact that they would have trees to be able to eat and drink and have those spiritual connections and beliefs would have been probably really helpful for them going into a land that they really could have died in. I mean, I can't imagine how scary that would be.
Right.
Especially when your livelihood, depending on hunting and gathering, to see an apple, you know, especially in a new country you've never been to, I know I can eat this and it won't kill me.
Right. Johnny started his westward journey in the late 1790s, and one of his first major stops was in Pennsylvania. By this time, he had already planted a few nurseries, but as he moved further west, his work really started to take shape. One of the first significant regions where Johnny left his mark was the Susquehanna region of Pennsylvania. The Indian Wars had just ended, and settlers were beginning to push into these new territories. Well, Johnny saw an opportunity, not just to plant trees, but to provide something essential for those new communities that were going to be popping up. And he continued his journey into Ohio, which would become one of the main areas associated with his work. Ohio was a wild, untamed frontier at the time, and it was here that Johnny really started to make a name for himself. He planted nurseries along the Ohio River and its tributaries, carefully choosing locations that he knew would become important as the area developed. But Johnny wasn't just a planter, he was a bit of a frontiersman too. He knew the land like the back of his hand, and he had an almost uncanny ability to sense where future towns would spring up. It's pretty remarkable how many of his nursery sites later became the centers of thriving communities. It's as if Johnny had a deep understanding of how people moved and settled.
Well, I mean, if I was looking for a place to settle, I'd be like, oh, how about buy all these apple trees?
Right.
Right. It's
convenient.
Yeah. And one of the things that I learned about Johnny is that he would move ahead of people settling. So he would move into like Ohio prior to people starting to settle towns and things there. So I agree with that, Josh. Like if people are going to be traveling, they're going to see some apple trees right. and they're going to know I can eat that. I can drink it.
There's okay, water here we nearby. Go.
Yeah. So it would probably be ideal. So maybe he is the reason why a lot of bigger towns like Fort Wayne is now in those locations because he planted those nurseries.
That's where I'd pick if I was building.
I know, right. Me too.
Just makes sense.
Oh, yeah. One of the more interesting stories from this time is about how Johnny would float down the Ohio River. He would take two canoes and tie them together. He packed them full of apple seeds. He'd stop at different points along the river, and he would plant nurseries, and he would trade saplings with settlers. In many cases, he didn't ask for payment. He was more interested in making sure these new communities had what they needed to survive. As Johnny traveled, he didn't just keep to himself. He became a well-known figure among all those settlers. People would welcome him into their homes, and he'd often stay for a night or two, sharing stories, talking about faith, and of course, handing out apple seeds. Johnny was known for his generosity. There's a story about how he gave his entire cabin, orchard, and even his cow to a widow and her four children who were stranded in Pittsburgh after her husband was killed. Johnny didn't think twice about it. He simply moved on. He continued his journey with nothing more than what he could carry.
They were probably his kids.
As the years went by, Johnny's journey took him into Indiana, another key area where he planted extensively. Indiana was still very much a wilderness at that time, but Johnny saw its potential. He planted nurseries along the Mauimu River Valley and into what would later become central Indiana, which is where Indianapolis is. His work in that region laid the groundwork for many of the orchards that would provide apples to settlers for generations. Johnny was also known for his ability to move freely among different communities, including Native American tribes. There are countless stories of Johnny warning settlers of impending attacks during the War of 1812, yet he was never harmed by those Native Americans. Some say it was because they saw him as some type of holy man, someone connected to the earth in a way that commanded respect. Others believed it was simply his peaceful nature that made him untouchable. Whatever the reason, Johnny was able to navigate these dangerous times with an almost supernatural ease. As Johnny's journey continued, his legend grew. He became a familiar sight in towns along the trails, often seen walking barefoot, wearing ragged clothes, and carrying his Bible and his bag of seeds. But despite his humble appearance, Johnny was a savvy businessman. By the time he was in his 50s, he had established nurseries across several states and owned over 1,200 acres of land. Though you would never know it by looking at him. So when he established those nurseries, typically he would purchase land that these nurseries were on, which is why he owned that much land when he was in his 50s. Johnny's journey wasn't just about spreading those apple trees. It was about spreading hope, resilience, and a deep connection to the land. He understood the importance of what he was doing, not just for the settlers who needed his trees, but for the generations to come. He was planting the roots of communities, literally and figuratively, helping to shape the future of the American frontier. As he moved through Ohio, Indiana, and even into Illinois, Johnny left behind more than just his apple trees. He left a legacy of kindness, of faith, an unwavering commitment to making the world a better place, one seed at a time. His journey across America wasn't just a physical one, it also helped him with his spiritual journey. So when we think about Johnny Appleseed's journey, we also need to remember that it was a lot more than just planting those trees. It was about building those communities that were going to be popping up, fostering those connections, and living a life dedicated to a higher purpose. So Johnny was a very complex individual. He was driven by a unique combination of spirituality, practicality, and almost otherworldly dedication to his mission. So to start with his appearance, the image most of us have is of a scruffy, barefoot wanderer wearing tattered clothes and maybe even a tin pot on his head. Mm-hmm. While some of that image is true, it doesn't fully capture the full picture of Johnny. Johnny was known for his simple, even eccentric way of life. He believed in living as humbly and as close to nature as possible. So this did mean that he often went barefoot, even in the winter. And he wore clothing that was often little more than rags. He didn't care much for material possessions. What he did care for was his mission and his connection to the earth. And his appearance was ultimately a reflection of his beliefs. He saw no need for those fancy clothes or the shoes of the time, when there was work to be done and a purpose to fulfill. But don't let that humble appearance fool you. Johnny was incredibly intelligent and well-read. He might have looked like a wandering hermit, but he was anything but simple-minded. Johnny was deeply knowledgeable about the Bible, which he carried with him everywhere, and he was well-versed in the writings of Emanuel Swedenborg, the founder of that faith. His conversations with settlers often revolved around those spiritual topics, and he was known to engage in those in very deep discussions about faith, life, and the natural world. Johnny wasn't formally educated, although I did read that there were rumors that he did attend Harvard, but they have no record of him ever attending there. But he was known as a man of letters. He could read extensively, and he had a way with words that captivated those he spoke with. People often described him as having a very sharp mind and a very deep understanding of the spiritual and practical matters.
It's all those apples.
Right. So let's talk about Johnny's business side. It's easy to get caught up in the image of a wandering saint, but he was also a savvy businessman. Throughout his life, Johnny acquired land and lots of it. By the time of his death, he owned over 1,200 acres across several states, mostly in Ohio and Indiana. But Johnny didn't acquire this land to become rich. In fact, he gave away much of his wealth, often to those in need. His land holdings were more about ensuring that his nurseries were protected and that the apple trees he planted would continue to grow and benefit future generations. One of the most fascinating aspects of Johnny's business side was his foresight. He didn't just plant those apple trees randomly. He chose sites that he believed would become future communities. And he was right. Many of those nurseries were planted in areas that became bustling towns and huge cities. But here's where Johnny truly becomes larger than life, and that's his reputation among the people. Johnny was beloved by settlers and Native Americans alike. He was known for his kindness, his generosity, and his deep respect for all living things. And I found countless stories of Johnny giving away everything he had to people just because they needed help, whether that be food, clothing, and even homes that he was living in. So he was a man who lived fully within his beliefs, and that authenticity resonated with everyone that he met. So he was very unique in that way. Johnny became a folk hero in his time. As he traveled, his reputation grew more and more, and people began to tell more stories about him. A lot of these stories were true, others were embellished a little, but all of them contributed to the myth of the man that we now know as Johnny Appleseed. He became a symbol of the American frontier spirit, independent, resourceful, and deeply connected to the land. But for all the myth and legend, Johnny Appleseed was still a man. And like all men, he faced challenges and hardships. He lived through the harsh realities of the frontier life, bitter winters, threats from wildlife, and the constant uncertainty of survival. Yet through it all, Johnny remained steadfast in his mission. He never wavered in his belief that he was doing something important, not just for people of that time, but for generations ahead. In the end, Johnny Appleseed's legacy is more than just apple trees that he was planting. It's the impact he had on the lives of countless people across the American frontier. He showed them that one person, no matter how humble, can make a difference. He taught them the value of living in harmony with nature, and he inspired them to see the world in a different way. So when we strip away the legend and the myth, we're left with a man who was truly remarkable. A man who lived his life according to his beliefs, who gave selflessly, and who left an indelible mark on the history and landscape of America. Johnny Appleseed wasn't just planting apple seeds. He was a symbol of the possibilities that lie in each of us to make the world a better place, one act at a time. That is
my Johnny Appleseed. I had no idea that he had that much land and helped that many people.
I didn't realize that he was planting those orchards, those
nurseries. Yeah, I thought he was just like scattering seeds as he's walking through.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Here's a tree, here's a tree. Yeah. Huh. But it was, you know, a lot of trees that were being planted. And so when you were a frontier, you would come across that and you could buy or trade, or they would just give it to you if you needed it, a tree. So it wasn't like you were just taking apples from the nurseries. You were taking a tree, and that tree would help, you know, your family survive.
Yeah.
You could drink from the apples, you could eat them. So it was very important for those settlers when they came across those nurseries. So just the fact that he like thought to go to a cider mill and to take the discarded seeds, and I'm just going to take these seeds and go ahead of people moving out west so that they will find these trees and be able to survive off them. So it's just like amazing to me that he had the foresight for that. And also, when like back then, he could have like had so much money you know, because he could have like only sold those trees to people who could have afforded it.
Right.
Yeah. But he didn't. And so that also makes him significant. And I think that's why people like, you know, really latched onto him while he was alive. Mm-hmm. So he was very famous.
Everybody loves free stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you love it even more if you can survive off of it.
Right.
So the fact that your family now lives in this area and you survived off this tree and you're like, yeah, you know, this tree came from Johnny Appleseed. You know, like it just became this man who was just larger than life at the time. And in the Unmasked episode, I'll talk about his death and the legacy that he left. But I'm telling you, like after he died, I found a bunch of old articles. And I mean, all of the United States was just very sad. Like you had very significant people, governors and things like that, who were very sad about his passing because they knew that their communities would never have survived or have been there if it wasn't for his help.
Right.
So they even like mentioned him in Congress when he died, that he had died, because at the time he was a significant person.
Are any of his orchards still around?
The only place that I could find of a surviving tree from that he would have planted is one tree. I think it's in Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
So that's one tree. After he died, all of his all of his lands were left to his sister. And Johnny didn't really care about owning the land. He just wanted to own it to make sure that his nurseries could be there.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, there was a lot of people who felt like, now that Johnny's not here, I think this land should come to me. So there was a lot of like rift that was happening that his sister had to deal with. But also I found like a story, I think it was in Pennsylvania, where he had gotten like, I think it was 400 acres, 200 or 400 acres of land. And he got the deed for them and everything, but he never filed it. So that land also didn't end up in his...
was in limbo.
Yeah. So again, it wasn't that he wanted the land to benefit from himself. He just knew the significance around it and he needed to own the land in order to do this stuff.
Right.
So like, I can just imagine being in Fort Wayne and seeing this man out, you know, and if you were an out of towner who didn't recognize him, you would probably just think he's a homeless man.
Mm-hmm.
But he probably owned more land than anyone else in Indiana.
Wow.
It makes me really question him spreading his seed.
Yeah, knowing how spiritual his faith, he was.
Yeah.
He never married, and they have no record of him ever having children.
No spiritual person ever got their dick around.
I mean, that's true. No,
I know that. However, no spiritual person who has gone to the extent that Johnny went through to help other people in a very significant way and not benefit himself from it. I just don't know that I believe that.
I would, because he's a straight man and it's hard for any straight man to not at least do it every once in a while. Especially, I mean, he's handling, you said he gave property to a widow and other women. And especially, you know, men would probably leave their wives alone with a spiritual man who carries around his Bible and his third leg.
But see,
I find it more interesting than the apples.
I guess I found no one who came out about that at the time.
No evidence about, at all.
Yeah, so.
Well, no one wants to brag about a bastard.
Yeah, however, later on, like, you would kind of know if that was your dad. And if he was, I mean, he was very famous at the time. So, like, I just feel like that would have stuck around.
And there
would
be more. I keep thinking, too, boy, he must have had just, you know, apples are full of fiber. There's all kinds of fiber. And, if you eat too many apples, y'all know what happens.
Oh, I know.
Like, I don't drink apple juice for that main reason.
Yeah,
like, ooh, he must
be. I like it, but it doesn't like me.
Right.
Watch out, Johnny. Don't let him use your outhouse. You have to get a new one.
All right. So for my shit far.
Hang on. Before you get to that, I forgot to give this to you at the beginning. We got a postcard.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to read it?
No, I want Josh to read it.
Oh, Lord.
Bless you.
This is from Topeka High School in Topeka, Kansas. Ooh. Kansas, who could this be from? Greetings from Hell Jr. Known as Topeka, Kansas, this picture is where I went to high school. I love y'all like family, even Kim. Hope everyone has a great time moving forward. And then a quote, let your light shine brightly, illuminating the world with your positive energy, and never lose sight of hope, even in the darkest of times. Your friend, Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor.
From the Temescal Valley Museum.
Oh, that's cool.
All rights reserved.
All rights reserved.
A lovely little postcard.
Yeah, it is.
Your high school's nice.
Yeah, he said he made it. He messaged me and asked me if we'd gotten it. He says, I'm afraid that it's not going to get to you because I made it. And I'm like, okay, I'll make sure that I check.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. Beautiful high school.
Yeah, it is.
Ours looked like a prison.
Right. It really did.
I mean, aren't most schools that way?
Right.
Remember the first day there, we pulled in and we're like, Mom's sending us to junior.
Only windows were in the upstairs and they were real small.
Yeah. Like, it was all brick. I mean, it looked like a prison. Style windows.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. So for my shit far.
Okay.
On the morning of November 30th, 2001, in Cambridge, Ohio, a worker at the Haven of Hope Victim Advocacy Center discovered a discarded can of Pringles in the parking lot. Well, the worker thought, this is weird, but picked it up to toss it away. Well, shit far. The can of Pringles was heavy. Much heavier than a normal Pringles can.
Oh, boy.
And there was a foul smell coming from it. As the worker opened the lid, saw it. Shit far and save the matches. The can is full of human crap. So the workers at the Victim Advocacy Center went and checked the security cameras, and they figured out who did it. And this is just like a lesson. Don't be throwing crap at places that have cameras.
Literally.
And just assume every place has cameras, especially now.
I mean, nowadays, most places do.
So Jack A. Blakesley is a criminal defense attorney who left his home that morning to attend a pretrial hearing for his client.
An attorney?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Who was a defendant in a capital murder case. The Haven of Hope Victim Advocacy Center was scheduled to be at that case during that day for the prosecution. Well, as he drove by the center that morning, he decided to do what he called a poo prank.
Oh, God.
He filled the can up and threw it out front. Now, during the court case, because, of course, he has to go to court over it, he gets charged.
Well, duh. He should get charged.
Oh, I know. During the court case, his defense was that he was, quote, blowing off steam.
Gross.
And said he had pulled this Pringles prank at least 10 times that year. Throw the key away.
How much steam has he got to blow
no
off?
No kidding.
Good God.
He better not still have his law license.
Well, funny you say that. The Supreme Court of Ohio ended up suspending his ability to practice law.
Good for them.
Saying his conduct proves he shouldn't practice law and that he discredited the profession. He also pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges of disorderly conduct and littering.
I mean, lawyers don't have a very good rap to begin with.
I was just thinking, you got to be a crooked SOB.
Yeah, he made it worse.
But can you just imagine like an innocent worker going out to the parking lot of an advocacy center, seeing a can of Pringles and think, my thought would be someone probably had it in their car and it fell out.
Or as they soon laid as it on top. Felt that it had weight to it. I'd be like, nope.
I wouldn't even open it.
I didn't see nothing.
Oh, I wouldn't have opened it. No. I would have just threw it away and wouldn't wash my hands.
Just opening it up and there being crap in it.
I just had Pringles last night.
Shit far. That's what I have to say about that.
I like the Lay's ones better than the Pringles.
Oh, yeah. They're a little crispier.
They're thicker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're a little thicker. I like them better.
I agree. I want some Pringles.
I know.
Yeah. I know. I do too.
Talk about apples and chitin and Pringles.
Right. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us today. We hope that you enjoyed my story. And
I did. He lived a life that I kind of dream about.
Oh, I know.
Except for the bear. Like,
if you have to be spiritual about anything. I feel like that's a cool religion to pick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, especially for frontiers.
I can't imagine going barefoot everywhere.
I know.
I take Ziggy outside and I'm whining about the grass touching my feet.
Yeah.
I would. Not the winter is what got me. I'm like, nope.
Oh, I know.
He had black toes.
And he had to have. He had
calluses.
Uh-huh.
All right, guys. Well, if you go to our website, you'll find our shirts. You can put your name on them. You can get our names on them.
Please, somebody go buy my BVD.
Someone wants her BVDs taken. We also have coffee cups that are super nice and on our website, so go look there. And we have this challenge of 15 new people to join us on Patreon.
To make Kim into a woman.
Yeah. And once we do, Josh will make Kim into a woman on a live podcast episode. And all of our Patreons will be able to join in on the video and watch it as we are recording it live, giving us feedback, telling us how much they love Shane, and that's their favorite host.
Shane will be telling a nice story while we're doing it.
Yeah.
Fiction.
So come join us on Patreon. You'll find the link in the show notes. And we have our Unmasked episodes, which is a bonus episode that goes along with every mystery we cover, mm-hmm. a little bit extra, deeper
dive. And it's
dive.
Videoed now also.
Yeah, and don't sometimes we're a little dirty.
I am a saint.
Yeah, I don't.
A virgin saint.
I don't really watch what I say a whole lot anyway in the regular episodes, but in Unmasked, it gets really bad sometimes.
We're not horrible.
We throw that F-bomb around every now and then.
Every once in a while.
We like to talk shit.
Oh, we like to talk a lot of shit.
So come talk shit with us on Patreon.
Yeah, I got some shit to talk about later.
There we go. We got some shit. So come open our bag of Pringles.
Gross.
You're disgusting.
Nasty.
All right, guys. Well,
we're definitely going to eat lunch before we do this.
I know. Yeah. We're going to see you later, and then we're going to start Unmasked right after. So we'll see you there. Bye.
Bye.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, O'Reilly.